Now, when Jesus came into this district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say that the Son of Man is? And they said, some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah. Still others, Jeremiah or one of the prophets. He said to them, but who do you say that I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood have not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, rock, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and the chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, God forbid it, Lord, this must never happen to you. But he turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
You were ever a little kid? When you were a little kid, did you have a favorite superhero? You know, the kind that you could read about in the comic books. I was a little kid once. Batman was pretty cool. Lurking in the shadows of night, but full of ingenuity and agility, he had all those nifty gadgets in his utility belt. Or there was the Flash, who could run faster than the speed of light. Or the Incredible Hulk with his radioactive strength. And of course, the favorite for a lot of us was Superman. Faster than a speeding locomotive. He could leap tall buildings with a single bound, catch bullets in his hands. I was like most little kids, I used to daydream about superpowers. If only we could have that special ability that would make us stand out or lift us above the pack. A lot of kids dream about it. One of my daughters was enchanted by Harry Potter. When she was little, she would have loved to wave the magic wand, to change back the clock, to alter nature, to cast a spell, or direct some zombies to do her math homework. We would have loved if she had waved the magic wand to clean her bedroom. But unfortunately, she did not have the power, no superpower. Now think about this for a sec. If you're a kid, part of the appeal is the possibility of transcending your circumstances. If only you had that superpower. You could say to the wind, be still, and it would be still. You could say to the stones, become bread, and there would be plenty of food for the hungry multitudes to eat. Why, I suppose you could even walk on water. So no wonder then that a kid like me could hear the stories about Jesus and be drawn to him. The Bible stories about Jesus reveal someone of great power, great authority. That's the Gospel of Matthew's favorite word for him, authority. Three different times, specifically, Matthew says Jesus had the authority to heal every single sick person. Everyone. And Jesus had extraordinary power in his words. He could speak truth to the Pharisees and the scribes and make them quiver in their boots. He could speak mercy and restoration to the man with the skin disease who had been cast out of town. He could speak forgiveness and healing to the one who was paralyzed. He was unusual, uncommon. If you didn't know better, you might think he was from the planet Krypton. So I can understand why Simon Peter had a hard time making any sense out of him. Not only does Jesus have the power, but sometimes when he speaks, it comes across as gibberish. Some of his words just don't make sense. The man who has this amazing ability now says to Peter, I am going to the cross. I must give my life. I must hand over everything and sacrifice myself. And Peter says, that's crazy. That's just crazy. That's not going to happen to you. Not to you, of all people. Then we go to the response. Jesus admonishes him, get behind me. You see things only from a human point of view. You don't see them from a holy point of view. You're thinking from the perspective of a little kid who wishes that he had superpowers. You're thinking that advancement and improvement are the keys to all of life. But it's confusing. It's extremely confusing. It was confusing for many in that first circle of disciples. If Jesus is the Messiah, what's he doing on a cross? The Messiah was never supposed to die. The Messiah was going to come and get rid of all the crosses. That's what they believed. The Messiah was going to ride into town on a gleaming white horse. He would wear a pure white robe. He would be morally unstained. He would stand taller and stronger than anybody they knew. And that means he would redeem Israel out of 1,000 years of degradation. They've been kicked around by all the other nations. Now the Messiah will make all things right. He was going to restore their kingdom, make Israel great again. He's going to fix the things that don't work. He's going to drive out the interlopers and invaders from other nations. That's what they wanted in a Messiah, because that's what they thought they needed. Whatever they needed, that's what they wanted. Whatever they wanted, that's what they expected. And here he is talking about going to a cross. No wonder that some of them, most of them, all of them would dwindle away the moment that he is arrested and condemned. He doesn't look so strong or mighty anymore. So much for his superpowers. But the scholars all point out that this little section in the center of the Gospel of Matthew is probably the key to understanding the whole book and the whole ministry of Jesus. Because at heart here, there's a truth, a crazy truth, an upside-down truth, that Jesus is not only the Messiah, but that his superpower is something called kenosis. That's the New Testament word for it. Kenosis is a word from one of Paul's letters. It talks about emptying yourself, losing yourself, giving yourself away. To be specific, Jesus sets aside the glory that is rightfully his own, and he takes up the mantle of a servant. And that's hard for us to swallow. That's difficult for us to understand. A number of years ago, my friend Jane was being examined by the presbytery as the final step before she could be approved as a minister, as a preacher. I think some of you might have been there. The meeting was up at Camp Lackawanna. They asked her all kinds of questions. And one old duffer, a fierce minister, well known for his grandstanding in front of his peers, said, Jane, tell us why Christianity is superior to all other religions. Now, that tells you as much about the questioner as it tells you about the one being questioned. Jane looked at them and asked them to repeat the question. Jane, why is Christianity superior to all other religions? That prompted some of us to start thinking about the question as well. Now, Jane, she's good on her feet. So like a good rabbi, she questioned the question. Why do you think we are superior? What happens to others if we start declaring that we are superior? Well, meanwhile, I'm thinking how this interrogation needs to end soon, but also how I would answer the question. And then the light went on. The revelation came. And I thought for a minute, if I were to answer how Christian faith is superior, I think I would say its superiority is in its humility. Because true Christian faith is shaped like Jesus, who sets aside all the glory and takes on the mantle of the servant even to the point of death on a cross. Now it's hard to understand this. Jesus says the only way to comprehend it is through an experience of revelation, an aha moment. It's a gift from the Spirit of God. And that nobody can apprehend this truth unless the Spirit comes and breathes it, so that mind and heart can understand what is not obvious. Otherwise, it just doesn't make any sense. And in those recurring moments throughout church history where the church has been intoxicated by its own power or privilege, it hasn't always understood, much less followed, the Christ who gives up everything for the life of the world. For the truth at the heart of it all is this. Once we used to say, when the Messiah comes, there will be no more misery. But now we affirm, wherever there is misery, there is the Messiah. Try to let that sink in for a minute. That's the hidden truth. That's the heart of our faith. It's not about being superior, but about becoming available. It's not about being first, but humbly choosing to be last. It's not about being right, but about being so completely humane that you shine in the sun in holiness. Henry Nouwen wrote a book some years ago. He had made some talks, and one of his publishers decided to put these on available and bind it. The title says it all. The downward mobility of Christ. And he wrote, it's not about advancing, but emptying. It's not about jangling the keys to the kingdom like your private possession, but using those keys to unlock the prisoners and set them free to experience the love of God. It's not about moving on to the best or biggest next job or best or biggest next place. It's about sinking in where you are and making the biggest difference you can. Which is exactly what Jesus is all about. So what would this look like? How would this be a model for you or me? And how might the followers of Jesus become more like him? I mean, wouldn't that be refreshing? A woman who runs an after-school program was talking about her volunteers. They come three times a week in the afternoons to tutor. It's a pretty effective program. The kids will stop by after school before the parents pick them up for work. There's a snack, a few minutes of fun. And then as you expect, the core of the program is a group of concerned volunteers who work with the kids. She says the volunteers come in two kinds. The first group of volunteers shows great concern for the children. They exude expertise and years of experience. They say, sit down, kids. Let me show you how it's done. Let's straighten out your nouns and verbs. Let's make sure all your numbers add up and subtract well. I will be the expert and tell you what to do. But the second group of volunteers, a much smaller group, takes a different approach. They don't tell the kids to sit down. They go and sit with them. They learn their names. They listen to their stories. They don't claim to be experts. And then they ask a lot of questions. Where are you struggling? Why don't you understand? What would you like me to show you? And they sit and listen. They set aside all their preconceived agendas and let the kids do the talking. I'm grateful for all my volunteers, said the director, but I've noticed the second group is more effective over time because they come alongside the kids and try to understand things as they understand them, and that actually changes them for the better. That's a little parable about the incarnation. Simon Peter didn't completely get it. He knew that Jesus was special. He was different. He saw the healings, the miracles, the astounding abilities. All he could perceive was the Lord's power. But his insight went only halfway. What he didn't yet understand is that the true power of Christ, his superpower, if you will, is his humility. It's his setting aside the glory for the sake of being with others. His compassion, his willingness to come alongside of us and all who need him. Simon Peter had figured out the Messiah had come, and it was Jesus. The Spirit of God opened his mind just wide enough to perceive that. But he didn't yet realize the whole truth of the gospel, that the Messiah, the Christ, comes to us, not to fish us out of our humanity, but to inhabit it with us. That, in fact, is the promise that opens and concludes the Gospel of Matthew. Jesus is God with us, always, even to the end of the age. Do you know what that means? That means there is nowhere so dark that the light of Christ cannot come. There is no place of suffering that the Messiah cannot enter. There is no cross that we carry that he has not carried already. There is no tomb so desolate that Jesus will be shut out or locked in. He is with us, always. And this is the will of God, the divine gift, the gospel truth, that we are known and that we are found because we are loved. That's good news. The Messiah is here, and it's Jesus. And as someone has said, the first task of a Messiah is to get people to stop looking for him.